You're back with another episode of The Geek Whispers. I'm Matt Brender.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we're joined again by a wonderful guest. Brian, would you introduce yourself for those that very unlikely but might not know you yet?
Hey, Whispers. Hi, this is Brian Gracely. I run the Cloudcast podcast and occasionally work for EMC.
I think you've just given us our new gang name. I think we're going to go, what up, Whispers, the next time I see these guys.
You can do like that W thing with your finger.
Yes.
Ooh, gang sign. I like it.
Wow. So how are you guys? Intense. It's been a while.
It has. Last time you were with us, you were with your partner in crime, Aaron, telling us the sausage making that is having a podcast as long running as the cloudcast.net. But things have been well.
Good. Good.
We've taken at least two bits of your advice, and we often say, boy, we should be as organized as those guys are.
I was listening to one just the other day. You guys are brilliant.
Thank you.
Keep up with the good work.
Thank you.
Absolutely agreed. But we wanted to bring you on today to talk about something totally different. You had a wonderful post on Tech Target pretty recently, and it explores a lot of things that you titled Fear and Loathing in Cloud Vegas. Do you want to frame that up for our audience that may have not read it yet? And then let's start digging into the details here.
Yeah, sure. So, and I'll sort of preface this by saying, I wrote this post and it basically said, it kind of came out of this thing that Aaron and I have every time we do our podcast, because we tend to, in our day jobs, we tend to live in the part of IT that's, pretty mainstream, and, it ebbs and flows and people do well, and, they're employed, and there's some disruption, but it's not radical. And then on the podcast, we always tend to focus on sort of what's coming next and startup companies and, transformational stuff. And there's this moment we always have at the end of the shows where it's almost like a Rotten Tomatoes meter. We go, if that all sort of comes to fruition, how screwed do you think we are? Like, do we still have jobs? Do we still have jobs in 3 or 4 years? Do we have to completely learn new stuff? Should we go work for this company? Like, we sort of have this epiphany probably in, half the shows or so. And so, him and I were talking. He had recently changed jobs, and he had sort of, we'd gone through the whole, is this a good job to take? How long, what should I do? Blah, blah, blah. And, I got to thinking about it, and I really don't know why this happens, but I think because I end up being at a lot of events because of the company I work for or whatever, you get to meet a lot of people, you get to know a lot of people. And when you bounce around enough, for some reason, people think you kind of have a plan or you know what you're doing. And I kind of put those two things together one day, and I sort of said, here's kind of the macro level, at least my sort of macro level view of the world in terms of, how our industry's sort of changing and what's different. And then I kind of weaved in some of these conversations I have with people who, quite honestly, they're all very sort of honest, open conversations. And it's people that are saying, look, I've been doing this for a while. I've been in the industry for, 10 plus years. I've kind of established a skill set. And they're kind of going through this whole, like, what do I do if, some of these changes are happening really fast. They feel like they're happening faster than normal. And so I just kind of jotted a bunch of stuff down, and that was kind of the origin of it. It was, typically the way I think, which is a couple of dots here and a couple of dots there. And sometimes I get in front of the keyboard and try and connect the dots.
But in particular, Brian, the post, at least as I read it through my lens, was sure. About these kind of tech evangelists. Maybe not everybody has that title, but people who are unicorns, to use a better word, who are communicators or speakers or out there some way in a mm-hmm. communication role, either officially or unofficially. And part of the dilemma was, okay, what's next? Is that yep. a suitable framing?
Yeah, I think so. Let me kind of, so that's a good point. So it's a weird conversation sometimes that I'll have. So for a long time, I worked at Cisco for a long time, which is basically a Silicon Valley company. And I've, for a lot of my career, I've had managers who are out in Silicon Valley. And it's a weird conversation to have with them if they ever want to talk to you about their career, because – the folks in Silicon Valley is, it's a location. There's an entire industry that's in that location. It was kind of like when I grew up in Michigan, everybody worked for the automotive industry. And so you had people that talked about these sort of long careers and where they're going to move up. And in my case, and a lot of these people that I talked to, what happened was the internet lets you work wherever you wanted to. And as you know, John, there's tons of people that go out and sort of make themselves into whatever they want to be. They develop skills. They build a brand. And what they're finding is, you know, they kind of got picked out, or they put themselves in a place where they said, hey, I'm great at speaking about things. I'm great at presenting. I'm great at, you know, basically being out front, whether you call that an evangelist or whatever you want to call it, a rock star. And more and more, they're finding themselves in these situations where they're kind of like, the company doesn't look at me in the same way that they did 2 years ago when we were at the beginning of this transformation. And I think maybe that's the genesis of where a lot of these conversations come from, is these people who don't live in the Valley, because 5, 8, 10 years ago, technology said you can work wherever you want, or they work at a VAR or whatever. And now they've risen to a rank that, you know, is a, you know, it's a senior enough position that the people back in the Valley or their central headquarters are going, I don't know that I need that much of a face out there. I'm a little worried that we're getting away from, it's all about you. It's not about what you're doing for my company anymore.
So Brian, is this like, is this the death of the rock star, the decline of the unicorn back to normal horse status in the environment, or am I speaking too soon for what you're trying to hit on?
I don't think it's I wouldn't look at it as the death of the rock star or the evangelist or whatever. I think you'll see over, I think there's a life cycle to those kind of jobs, right? Because at the end of the, my take on it is, I think at the end of the day, those kind of jobs tend to come up when you have a transformation going on. So whether it's a marketing organization saying we've got to be more engaged with social, but we really don't know what that means, or you've got a company that's going through a technology transformation. Maybe they acquired somebody and they're trying to be out in front of what that thing does. So, you know, a great example is like VMware dealing with getting into the sort of the networking industry, and they've got to find people that came from the networking industry to talk about it, because that's not their bread and butter. And I think what happens is, and we used to see this all the time at Cisco, is because I was there for 100+ acquisitions. You would bring on people, or you would keep people around for a couple of years. In essence, they would be an overlay, if you will. Now they call them evangelist. And then the expectation was that person's job was to basically kind of work themselves out of a job by spreading their knowledge. And I think what's happened is now that we tend to call them evangelists or rock stars or something that's at a higher level than like sales overlay or, you know, marketing out in front, whatever it would be, there's this belief sometimes by those people that no, this is my role. This is a long-term thing. And I think sometimes they forget that in a lot of cases, not every case, but when you're that person out in front of a transition, there's a reason you did that. But at some point it's supposed to become general skill set, general knowledge. And a lot of times I find that those folks, you know, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's whatever, they find themselves going, why don't they love me as much? You know, why doesn't, huh. You know, I see it over and over again.
Jumping in here, two things I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about classic economic theory. And in some ways, I feel like what we're talking about is the rise out of the middle class of sort of an upper class, and the sort of ebb and flow that you see there, you know, that it's sort of not sustainable to have, like you said, everybody rise to the highest echelon. The system won't hold or sustain that. And so the concept that these can be transitional and not permanent jobs or roles, I think, is really important, which leads to my other thought of, I've been predicting a little bit of the death of social media, if we're going to declare war on something else. And John has used the wonderful example in previous podcasts that you don't have the fax department or the telephone department, that as we understand social more and more as a platform construct, will move back into the world of sort of traditional marketing practices and leveraging the platforms in these new ways we've become more accustomed to, but it won't be so outlandish or newfangled that we will have to dedicate so much navel gazing to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. You guys know the social space much better than I do in terms of, you know, how far along it is. I mean, I think at the end of the day, social, to me, it feels like it's evolved into sort of two things. There's a piece of it that's, you know, it's becoming one of the new media sources. So maybe it's replacing books or it's replacing newspapers or pieces of television. And then I think part of it is people are trying to figure out how to make it a marketing medium because, you know, that's just sort of a natural thing that business does. And you know, they're basically trying to go, there's ways to figure out if people have problems and I want to understand that problem. And then I want to put myself, you know, in front of that problem.
Well, nature abhors a vacuum and marketing abhors a blank space. So yeah, I'm watching.
If there are hashtags, they will be used.
Well, hash all the things. I'm watching people run in with the, frankly, some of the equally bad practices. Bad marketing can happen on any platform. I'll just put it that way. I'll just shortcut it that way.
Yep. I'm looking at this from the marketing department as well, Brian, and it's interesting. I'm seeing an echo of what you're saying, but for looking at it from the inside out, I actually do. I think there's a different outcome here. And from the inside out, I think I'm seeing a lot more evangelists, people called evangelists of some, and I've seen people move from SE to evangelist, or often it's a technical marketing role, at least if you're talking to technologists. It means you lose your quota. You don't carry a bag anymore, which is nice. It puts you in front of a lot more customers. So you're right. It is kind of a sales overlay. Actually, a lot of people that are called CTO are actually in the same boat, right? You're a CTO, and what people may not realize is many people with CTO in their title, it's actually a field role. you go out and you talk to customers.
Chief talking officer, yeah.
Yeah. But what I'm seeing is it's an evolution of technical marketing. A couple years ago, technical marketing was making white papers, and they would make these PDFs or whatever, and they would put them on the web, and people would download them. Even years before that, you know, IBM had Red Books, or you know, there were many. You had these technical publications.
Yep.
Now we realize that a lot of people aren't reading the PDFs. The PDF, a big book, is not an appropriate channel for a lot of these things, or not an appropriate format for a lot of the information you want to convey. So we've started putting out the same information on blogs, and to a greater or lesser extent, depending on what company you're in, we've also started to put this stuff up on Twitter and putting the individuals up on Twitter, or in VMware's case, sending them to vMugs, etc., to try to get them some personal skin in the game. But a lot of it is publishing the same material that would have been in evaluators' guides and installation guides and best practices guides and that sort of stuff before. But you have these new channels, so you know, you think of, well, it's marketing, but it's an educational medium, and I see it as a tech marketing role. But that's from a corporate out, right? And so often these people do have to come in from the field and be part of corporate, because technical marketing is usually, if our org chart lady can chime in, you know, technical marketing is usually part of one of in these big companies, one of these business units, not part of the field force. So I'm actually seeing more of them, but I do see it might be a career shift for people. I don't know.
Well, I think you highlight something that's kind of a good point. That type of role, where it's, you know, there's a certain amount of technology depth that you have, which people desire. You have an ability to communicate, which, you know, the deeper you go into sort of engineering, sometimes you don't foster that skill, right? You focus. I mean, we've all sort of seen the engineer that you don't put out in front of people because it's just communication's not their first thing. They write. There's putting people out in front of people to educate, and there's putting people out in front of people to help sell, right? And any account manager will tell you the difference between those. I think the key is, and you know, VMware's got some that are fantastic. I think the key is you want to keep those teams fairly small, partially because they're hard to find, but you want to keep them fairly small, and I think you don't want to where I see the problem is people tend to sort of go, I really only like one aspect of this job, and so I'm just going to focus on that. And I think what two things happen. When the team gets really big, and I think, you know, I'll give an example of this, and I hope Chad Sakich won't take offense to it. You know, when he first started off his sort of Chad's Army, which was in essence technical marketing, they were 10 or 12 people. And, you know, a lot of us looked at him and we said, well, you know, super smart people, that's a fantastic thing. When they became 200 people and Chad would run around and tell everybody they were a rock star, I remember sitting there thinking, because I was managing people at the time, I said, I dread the day that they have to do an annual review with HR and they go, okay, 200 rock stars, fantastic. Now let me squeeze you into a bell curve because that's the way we're going to do HR reviews. And you guys can all think you're rock stars, but the reality is 80% of you are going to get that mid-grade. And then you're going to have to sort of decide, are you a tier one rock star? Are you a tier two rock star? Do you really need the rock star title around your neck anymore? And I think there's some emotional baggage that goes with that people don't quite grasp when they're out, you know, telling people they're rock stars and telling them they're this and that and the other. And I think that's where I end up having a lot of these conversations with people is they get a lot of pats on the back. It's a little bit like, you know, when kids, these big time high school athletes get recruited and then they go off to college and they realize, oh, I'm not as good as I once was or something. And I think in our industry, with it moving faster, I think some of these folks are getting caught off guard and going, whoa, hold on a second. Where do I fit in the big ecosystem of things?
It's really, really interesting.
A couple things here. Sorry to jump in, but about the two directions you can look at it. From the inside, the emotional component of what do I want for my career? What gives me satisfaction? Do I need that kind of affirmation and constant sort of challenge? Yes. I mean, I think those things are challenging. As you look at a life career for people who prefer that kind of type A behavior versus people who genuinely are, you know, I guess the farmer versus hunter or, you know, A versus B, whatever your personality is, certainly a company needs a distribution of a lot of different types. You don't need as many type A disruptors as you do type B solid workers. And so hopefully people find the slot that fits them best. And maybe one is more comfortable at a certain time in life than another, et cetera. So the optimist in me hopes that sorts itself out. From the outside looking in, I think, though, I would argue we do need some of those type A's and call it rock star, unicorn, what have you. Humans are inherently attracted to a certain cult of personality. And if we talk about the shifting platforms and how to get information consumed, in the same way that we can fuss and complain about the Anchorman kind of mentality, you know, the movie by the same name, sort of laugh this and mock at the stereotype, through history, we've been drawn to that cult of personality figure. And you could easily name six or seven of them. Rarely does it end well, but hopefully in business it ends a little bit better. The motives aren't world domination, for instance. But I don't know. I it's interesting as I think through this, the sort of philosophical implications, because it matters, actually, how we react. Marketing is a lot about hearts and minds. So,
and I, this is where I really wanted to ask Brian. I mean, there are some roles like what John was bringing up, and you said the CTO, the chief talking officer. There seems to be inherent multidisciplinary positions as part of our technical and social world in business. So are we just seeing that trickle, like a trickle-down economics of being allowed to be a personality as well as a technical mind? Or is it really that there will be just few of those positions that are the CTO level folk?
I might
not have articulated that well at all.
No. I think what you're pointing out is a good thing. So I'll sort of take it in two parts, right? So, you know, our industry, let's just take technology, but you know, our industry for the last, I don't know, 20 years has generally, from an economics perspective, has functioned exactly the same way, right? Somebody put in a bunch of capital, did research, invested in some technology, and then they had a whole model of distributing that technology and getting it to an end customer, and various people made money along the way, and that model wasn't really disrupted, right? So whether it was IBM or VMware or Cisco or HP or whoever, you know, it was generally the same model. And nowadays, so, you know, you could have these very sort of disciplined roles. Like I work in marketing and I understand the process, and I work in engineering. And now you've got two things going on. The economics of our industry are under significant changes, right? So take cloud computing. So everything moves in theory from CapEx to OpEx. So if you don't understand economics and, you know, marginal cost of the next unit, and you don't understand learning curves and stuff, all of a sudden you can't figure out how the industry's changing. And then on the other hand, you've got, you know, these movements like open source, where you don't have to have massive capital put up front to do this R&D. It can actually be done by communities of people. And then how you derive value out of that is very, very different. It's not, you know, maker, VAR, distributor, customer, whatever. It's, you know, it could be a lot of different ways. And so I think you are seeing a certain amount of skill set for somebody who can sort of understand that intersection between new economics and, in some cases, new technology models at the same time. And for a lot of people, that's really hard to grasp. And so, you know, if you have some of those skill sets, or, you know, you have a skill set that is, I understand software in a hardware world, and all of a sudden they think you're like magical or something, those are pretty unique. Right?
Yeah.
Five, 6 years from now, or 10 years from now, if, you know, the industry sort of shifts and adopts one of those models, then I think we get back to, you know, more kind of traditional types of roles. But yeah, right now there is a lot of opportunity for that sort of unicorn-y kind of multidisciplinary skill set. And, you know, we see some people that are really good at it. You know, I see a lot of people who look at CTOs and go, boy, I remember back in the day, you had to be the guy who developed protocols and wrote stuff and, you know, wrote code. And now it's like, that guy just speaks at sessions all the time. Like, I could do that job. I should make a lot more money. Right. And that's one of those conversations I do hear a lot, is people who were in SE 2 years ago who go, I can get up and make PowerPoint slides and present at shows. If that's what a CTO does, that's what I should do.
Yeah, I think, boy, that's interesting. I think it comes down to career planning, and you're right, that has disrupted. But you've got to be, and maybe this is where it comes from the field to the corporate, but you've got to own a part of the company function, right? You've got to be part of a program. I mean, Brender was not just this dude that bounced around at EMC. He was a program manager, and he managed the EMC Elect program. I've managed the vExpert program. I have a consulting program. In previous lives, I've owned a communities platform. I've owned a blogging platform. I've had a blogging program. Amy runs a, you know, influence marketing program, and has a couple of media programs that she does, and some training programs. So I think it's important for people to realize that, like, we don't get paid just to, like, fart around on social media. We actually run programs that have a corporate function. And if your function is to run around and talk to customers, well, that's cool. But you got to look at, okay, what's your career path, right? Are you going to Are you going to move back into sales? Are you going to be an SE manager? Are you going to be a sales manager? Or are you going to move over into a corporate function? Like, you know, there are evangelism roles, but they're running developer programs, right? Or they're running product marketing or product management.
And I think what you hit on is really, really important, right? There are jobs that disconnect you, like you talked about, right? Like, there's jobs that will disconnect you from a quota, and they're great. But at some point, and you hit on it, at some point people go, what are you really tied to, right? You know, if you're part of community, for example, it's I'm trying to drive people that are going to help, you know, grow my market in some way. So you ultimately kind of become sort of part of a marketing organization or something. I think where if I was looking at my career and I felt like I wasn't really connected to one of those core functions, you know, sales, marketing, engineering, or like finance, you know, I was just sort of constantly overlaying. That's where I think people would worry about that. You know, I would start to worry about, like, where are you going with this stuff? And I think what you hit on is exactly right. You've got a you know, direct line back into something that's got some reality to it.
Yeah, there's a real core disciplinary train of thought you have there for all of us that I think I'm going to leave this conversation thinking, like, okay, what's that core piece of the puzzle that I'm a piece of that no matter what platform we're on or however popular being at an event is in the future, that I can always go back to that. And we all kind of need that expertise in the org chart. Back to Amy.
I believe. Who knew? My life is the org chart creator.
Well, eventually, if you're that person that doesn't do anything, you'll eventually be laid off. I've met some of them.
Right. I don't know. Sometimes you get promoted. Was that my out-and-out voice?
Well. Sometimes you don't attach yourself to the stink. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Brian, you hit on a lot of great details about what the job role actually is, but I think we did kind of gloss over the significant factor that is how close are you to headquarters, the physical location of you in an organization. And as somebody that's in a place that's, you know, up and coming, RTP, what do you feel about that? Do you think it changes your strategy as you look at your personal skill set and where you want to fit in a business?
I think it's different. You know, it's different for me now than say it was 10 years ago for a couple of reasons. So, you know, the first is, you know, when you're young and you don't have a family or you don't have huge obligations, you know, it's not as big a deal. You're kind of focused on the, what am I doing sometimes? I think what ends up happening is, and this is the trick. I mean, this is the choice that everybody kind of has to make. It's, are you going to live in a place that, you know, is kind of central to where my job is, or what am I going to trade? What am I going to give up, for example? So, you know, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, we've lived in North Carolina for a long time. I've had the conversation with my wife umpteen different times. I'm like, honey, we can move to California. Like, that's perfectly fine. Or, you know, and there's trade-offs and pros and cons that go with that, right? Lots of job opportunities. You're close to the headquarters. You can have all those hallway conversations. Difference in cost of living and family, or I can get on an airplane all the time and you guys can establish a life and stuff. And so I think those things do come into mind. I think where there's a piece of it as an individual where you say, you know, does where I live matter or not matter as much? But the other thing, I think there's times when you kind of have to educate your boss, or you have to get a sense of from your boss, you know, how much does location matter? Because I've had bosses who are fantastic about, hey, being on the phone is the same as being in person, and we'll work whatever hours we're going to work. And I've had others who, you know, I don't want to say they go out of their way to make it difficult, but they don't go out of their way to make it easier for people that are remote. And, you have to do quite a bit of extra work when you're not bumping into people in the hallways and you're having lunch with them, or, you know, kind of, there's a certain amount of face-to-face that has to happen. And I think that factors in long-term into, you know, what you want to do with your career or where you want to live. And you figure out what those trade-offs are.
I think it's extra funny because we were promised cars that fly, and we were promised that our jobs would be in the cloud and it wouldn't matter where we were. But I don't know. The same thing with social media, right? I just got back from Costa Rica, and one of the things I observed was in the most remote of areas, there was still Wi-Fi. And above all else, it seems that people have a need to connect. And when you can't connect as closely in person, you'll do it through the tools. But when you have the opportunity, you'll do it in person. And the center of gravity matters. So I also live in North Carolina and near one of the headquarters of my job. But it means that I work West Coast hours, it has implications. But I also, my counter argument is it forces me to develop skills for better or for worse. I can't rest on my laurels. I have to use a different skill set to engage, which may put me in the position to have different job opportunities. So I think that's the benefit. If there's there's a benefit.
That's really interesting, Amy. I mean, you're down the road from Brian, at least relative to John and myself. And really dig into that a little bit more. So what do you think that does to you, skill set wise?
Well, being down the road from Brian means at any moment a whiteboard session could break out. No, but it's I, in all seriousness, I think that, and you can see this with Brian's career, if I can observe it as an outsider, you know, he's got a podcast, he does have a large video following, he does, I was saying before we started recording, he and John and our, in our industry are two people go to all the time to consult with on job paths and career paths. And I think you get the two perspectives. You get, you know, somebody, John, who is in one of the centers of power for technology, for sure, on the West Coast, and Brian, who's taken the path another way. And there are a lot of people in both roles. If you have an engineering role, I think it's a lot harder to be offsite oftentimes. If you have a marketing or sales role, and your job is going to require a lot of travel anyway, you mainly need to be near a hub. You might be able to compensate for it somewhat. You will travel a lot, and I do think it makes you hungrier. It does set you at disadvantage, so you work harder oftentimes.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about some of these roles is they are so unique. People have kind of given up and hire remote. So we would like to hire people who live in Palo Alto, but you just can't. Right. We like our tech marketing people. Every time we have an opening, it's like, OK, really needs to be on site, really needs to be here in the Bay Area somewhere. And I have colleagues that drive for 2 hours to get to Palo Alto. It's kind of nuts. But you can't find, you know, you need a specialist in exactly one technology and a good communicator and a kind of a unicorn type who can communicate and speak engineering. And they happen to be in, you know, Santa Fe or Massachusetts or Belgium, you know. So what do you do? Well, you hire them and then you fly them in. This is a very rarefied skill set. So you do what you can. So in that sense, I guess you drive your, if you are remote, drive your career to being a specialist in something. And maybe that works out for you.
Yeah. And maybe the writing's on the wall, as we've been talking about, that the idea of this being such a unique skill that it doesn't matter where you are, that location won't matter in the long run. It can only last so long.
It's tough. They hump it. They get on the planes. They come in. It's tougher, right? It is tougher when you're remote, though, Brian.
I think, you know, so part of it is, you know, you can say it's tougher, and I mean there's like I said, there's trade offs, right? Maybe it's cost of living or whatever. I think the guidance that I tend to give people is, because I'm lucky enough to know a lot of those sort of unicorns, right? It could be, you know, a Duncan Epping who's on the other side of the world and is considered the best of the best. But, you know, the thing I always kind of tell those guys sometimes is, if you decide not to live in one of the core places, like, you've got to figure out of these two or three characteristics, which one is least important to you, right? It's being near family or career path, or, you know, how much money you make or how much you travel
or size of your house
or whatever it is. And you kind of have to be okay. Like, if you kind of go, look, you know, one of those is really important to me. There's a mental hurdle you've got to get over to sort of say, I'm okay with the other one not being at that same level as the rest of them. And the folks that I find that are really well balanced and deal with, say, like remote jobs and do them for a long period of time, like, they've worked through that in their mind. And the ones who struggle with it are the ones who are like, I want to make a lot of money. I want a big title. I don't want to have to travel all the time. I want to be home. I want. And you go, man, you're not going to find that. You're not going to find that job anywhere. You know, unless maybe you go off and start your own thing and you get really lucky and it runs well. And it is, I find it's very hard for people to grasp that concept that, like, you know, one of those three or four things they have to sort of let go. It's a mental process and you have to kind of go through it. But that's like the one piece of advice I try and give people, and some listen and some don't. But that's probably the hardest thing, is figuring that what that one thing is.
Yeah. I got to think, though, if you're a good communicator, it's got to help, whatever your career path is, right?
It is. And the other thing I find sometimes is the ones who are really good, you get this thing where, you know, you get a lot of pats on the back and it's great. And at some point, you're going to reach where people stop patting you on the back, right? Like, there's a, you know, you're doing great. There's a change in management, for example. And the new ones don't look at you as being as great as the old ones did.
What
happens is, yeah, what have you done for me? Yeah. And folks get frustrated, like, wait a second, I earned this level of respect, or I earned this. And people forget sometimes, you know, you're at the same company, but the things have changed, and you kind of have to reposition yourself, or like you said, sort of do something for the new ones. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is, because we're all type A and we're all sort of, you know, high strung sometimes, is you don't want to go through that process. And that's another one of those areas where I think people sometimes, you know, people sometimes are shocked that somebody left a company. And I think a lot of times that's what happens, is they're like, wait a second, I got disrespected, or, you know, all my years are no longer worth something. And that's kind of the nature of companies sometimes.
Is this the subtitle, the dark side of the unicorn?
It could be. Well, I mean, that's one of the things, like I was, you know, coming back to what I said at the beginning. I mean, Aaron and I try not to drive ourselves crazy going, well, we've seen a little bit of the future. We're not sure if it's really the future, but if it is, uh-oh, you know, like, what are we going to do? We're kind of like that article that came out today where, was it Mayor Bloomberg said, you know, we're closing down these coal factories, and you can't just tell them all to become developers. That's not going to happen. And I think in some cases there is some of that in our industry where people are going, I know it's changing, but man, I don't know how to do that new thing.
Yeah. And it's important to stay it's sometimes important to kill your former self, right? We all know the person in the office. This doesn't happen to just unicorns, right? We all know the person in the office that's been there a little too long in the role and thinks that they kind of run everything or is pretty entitled. And, and I've been at VMware for over 8 years, and I've tried to watch for that in myself. And I, at one point, I was the blogging guy at VMware, right? And my boss had a talk with me and said, look, you can either be the blogging guy and you can do that, you know, for years, or you can, you know, kill that and then do something else. And that's when we started the VExperts. And that turned out to be even better than being the blogging guy. And he told the story of his career where he ran Big Admin, the sysadmin community for Sun. And he had to give that up and go be a product manager. And then he became a director at Sun because, you know, and went on with that. So I think we all kind of have to kill our old selves to create our new selves. We can't sit, I mean, like you said, everything's changing. Delivery methods are changing. The cloud's changing stuff. Business models are changing. We're supposed to be on the cutting edge of stuff. So you better not, you know, get too comfortable.
Being
the big talking mouth. Well, hey, Brian. I wanted to ask Brian, what do you consider yourself right now? And we talked about how you have to be part of the machine. You have to be part of have a role in a trajectory. In your current role, are you considered technical marketing, or where have you launched yourself?
Yes, so I've sort of settled in I've sort of settled into marketing. I think I consider myself a marketer, and I think I do fairly well in that space. I think the way that I kind of look at it now is I'm at a stage where it's like you better be really good at one thing, and I don't know that I am really good at one thing, but I've tried to narrow that down. And then the thing I do is, you know, and this is kind of why I love running the podcast, is I look at it as sort of a side hustle, right? And I've always, you know, Aaron and I and myself have always said, look, you've got to do something for free to figure out either, you know, as a hobby because you like it, or you want to learn something new. And so I kind of have this thing of, I'm trying to become much narrower and better at one focal area in my day-to-day job that pays my bills. And I'm trying to get better at sort of a side hustle that maybe a few years down the road turns into something. And, you know, that's kind of where I think it's evolved to, at least for me personally.
Yeah. And Brian, is that the subtext of the future? Is don't get too comfortable because it's changing?
I think that's always the case in technology. I think the one subtext I would say is I think it's changing faster now than it ever has. And that's the piece I think you really got to watch out for, because whereas maybe it took 8, 10, 12 years before for sort of a big change to happen, now I really think it's about 5 years to where whatever the biggest thing at the time isn't anymore, and you couldn't fathom it. So that would be the one thing I would sort of put out there, is I think the time frame is like 2x what it used to be, and I don't think it's going to slow down. So
that's the problem with the Cloudcast. You guys talk to too many startups and things like that. So it's like staring into the sun, and eventually it drives you mad. It drives you mad because you see all the infinite futures that might happen. On the other hand, think about who the number one phone company was probably 8 years ago, right? It was Nokia, right?
Yeah, and BlackBerry.
Yeah, and BlackBerry. Do you want to be working for either one of those companies now? Uh-uh. So that's
pretty
fast.
And the crazy thing is, if you had been sitting around even 5 years ago, you would have never come up with a scenario where they would literally both be out of business. I mean, and I don't say that facetiously. Like, that's crazy.
These are giant companies. These were huge companies.
Yeah, well, and it's and they're not stupid, valuations like Snapchat. They were legitimate companies.
Wait, my Snapchat stock is worth nothing? And you think of the classic example, at least I'm of an age where my parents are concerned. I've changed jobs too many times. They want me in this very stable kind of position because they were. And I think this generation, on many years on either side of my age group is we it doesn't work that way anymore. And it ties back into what you guys were saying. And I think that's so true of if there's any benefit for attempting unicorn status or going for something else, it is that constantly reinvent yourself and don't assume that what you were congratulated for yesterday is what you're going to be rewarded for tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good summary.
For technologists, though, it's doubly difficult, right? Because we have to become experts in a particular area. So maybe your area is Flash now, or maybe it's storage I/O, or maybe it's caching, right? And I didn't mean to talk about you, Brender, but but you have to go deep. You have to go deep in an area, right? And then, but at the same time, we're saying okay, but you also have to develop a skill set that is transferable to when the technology shifts, right? So you have to be an expert on Flash today, but in 5 years, you're an expert on something else, but you become a better, salesperson, you become a better communicator, you become a better explainer, you become a better decision maker, you become a better program manager, all these sort of things that you get with a job in day-to-day expertise. So I think for technologists, it's doubly hard.
Yeah. No, I would agree. And I think part of why so many of us love technology is because, the more you're around it, the more you kind of realize like you've got to have a lot of those skills. Like they like that I communicate and I get to play with the technology and I get to think about these crazy problems. And that's part of the appeal of it is it's different every day and you got to wear a lot of hats. And then at some point you do have to figure out, where do I fit in the marketplace? Because you would like to make a little more money or have a little more responsibility or whatever drives you. So, yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
Well, and it's the old publishing concept of nothing is wasted on the writer. And I think that's a life truth here as well. Nothing is wasted on the unicorn or rock star. And there are plenty of rock stars who can elongate their career by reinventing themselves over and over. So you don't necessarily have to flame out.
Am I the only one? I really dislike the word rock star.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I actually prefer unicorn, which sounds funny, but
rock star is just so the spotlight's on you. You're solo. You're more important than everybody else. And boy, I just don't see the role that way.
No, and I think, again, I love your analogy in the blog, Brian, of you don't have hundreds of them on stage at once.
No, I mean, unless it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and,
Even then, yeah, somebody's tripping somebody else and hogging the mic time.
Yeah, it implies a diva status that I there's definitely a tone in the post and in this conversation where there's a great humility if you're going to survive in the tech industry. You have to have it. You have to live it. You have to be ready to lose your status just with, the person above you in the org chart changes. You have to be ready for these things, and it doesn't suit the terminology rock star very well.
Yeah.
Hubris leads to the dark side. Again, it's back to dark unicorn.
But also, everybody's career is very different, right? And our careers are getting more and more different, right? I've had several careers, and so don't emulate that, right? I trained as a scientist and got a PhD, and then I was an entrepreneur, and now I'm this kind of weird community manager, program manager person. But I was looking at, I mean, one of the people that I kind of envy when I see him on stage, who is a real rock star, is somebody like Peter Coffey, who is the VP of strategic research for Salesforce.com, right? And I'm like, well, I should be like Peter Coffey. When I see him on stage, I'm like, well, he's very important. He's a VP and I'm not. So he gives a lot of speeches. So he's exactly this kind of rock star that we talk about. But then I just looked him up on LinkedIn, right? He's spent his whole career as an editor at Information Week, I think. But in any case, as a journalist, right? Which is long hours, low pay, getting your chops, managing people, you know, managing stories, putting out enormous amounts of copy, listening to, you know, vendors, you know, lie to you for 20 years. And then he became the VP. So my point is, you don't just become the guy that gets up on stage at Salesforce.com by, you know, at the age of 30 after having been an SE, right? We all have very interesting, or most people who are successful have had very kind of interesting twists and turns before they got there.
Really boring, menial, trivial positions along the way too. And I think that's part of the story here. And we talked about this, that the people that are allowed to go out and communicate, there's a lot of other stuff that happens there. We're seeing their highlight reel as they post it to Instagram and Twitter, and they have huge followings and they have great blog posts, but you don't see all the churning and the difficulty in the back end. And I guess that's part of the humility of it, right? That maybe some of the people one might be inclined to compare themselves to, they're idealizing that person's experience because they're not seeing most of the actual hard work behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yep. No, I think that's exactly it. And it's, you know, it's like John said, it's everybody's going to be different. There are people that absolutely have the mindset and the stamina and can put up with the ups and downs to be a rock star. It's a smaller number than I think a lot of people think. But no, I think you're right. And you know, I mean, the one thing I'll sort of point out in my case is, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up to, you know, a bunch of, you know, my family were factory workers and sort of, you know, blue collar workers. So, you know, my mindset, I wouldn't imply on a lot of people because it is very sort of pragmatic. And, but there's folks who live it and love it and they would rather have their hair on fire. And I don't begrudge any of them. I think ultimately it's, you got to go find what you can get up and want to do every day and, you know, however much ups and downs you want to deal with. So, but guys, this has been fun. I don't get a chance to talk to you this much usually, even when we're at shows. So this has been fun. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Yeah. Thank you too, Brian. I mean, thanks for writing the piece as well. It really has made us all reflective on careers and longevity and also just, where we're going and some of the words we use when we describe people that really stand out, what that implies. So thank you so much for your time. Geek Whispers, always a pleasure. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Geek Whispers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whispers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week. If you're that person that doesn't do anything, you'll eventually be laid off. I've met somebody.
Right. I don't know. Sometimes you get promoted. Was that my out loud voice?
Yeah. Sometimes you don't attach yourself to the stink. I think that's what you're trying to say.